This is episode 459. Do you feel like you're always trying to get back to where you were in your younger years? Back to a time when you weighed less, or back to a relationship where you felt loved, back to a job that you once had that felt purposeful and empowering, or even back to a time when the kids still needed you, or simply a time when you didn't obsess over food? And I guess really, all of this is about getting back to a time when life seemed much easier, and you weren't as horrible to yourself quite as much. Today's conversation is with a friend and a fellow coach, and we're talking about the many different seasons or chapters of a person's life, and how as a society and a culture, we don't have the rituals or traditions that help us to step into the new chapter and change our mindset so that we're actually mentally okay with the changes that just happened to us. Instead, we keep trying to get back to being 25, skinny, and free, which over the course of your life, with each transition that leaves you craving the past, it just creates an even bigger void for us to fill with food, with drink, screens, and other cheap, temporary pleasures. And out of all of this is born food noise and the perfect conditions for a life of yo-yo dieting. This conversation is profound, and if you've ever felt desperate about wanting to get back to who you used to be, particularly with your body, then I really think this conversation is worth listening to. So, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome back to another episode of the show where this year it's my mission to support 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean dealing with what's really weighing you down and not just the number on the scale and not just the food choices, the deeper stuff, the mindset, the psychology, the things that lead you to be yo-yoing in and out of weight gain and weight loss and good food and bad food and all of that kind of stuff. So if you want to go a little bit deeper than the average diet goes, then scroll down to the show notes or the caption below, click the link, book in a time, and we can have a bit of a chat to see whether or not we're a good fit to work together. So today we have the fabulous Lisa Ferguson back. She was previously on episode 405. She was fired up. We love that energy about Lisa. Lisa's fantastic. She's all sorts of things. She's been a gym owner. She's a personal trainer. She's very passionate about sort of, I guess, functional and safe physical movement with your body, especially as you get older. She's been Young Business Person of the Year. She's just an all-round legend. She plays a very important part in the Mind Body Nourishment program that I run and takes over coaching from time to time, which is super amazing. And I love watching her work. And so, Lisa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. How wonderful to be back.
Yes, I know. We have to make this like a regular segment, I reckon.
Yeah, segment. What will we call it?
Oh, it's got to be something rant, like something with rant in
there. I was going to say ranty. Yeah. 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 Got to be rant related for sure.
You and I have a tendency.
Oh, fun.
So we were throwing around ideas of what to talk about today, and we landed on this idea of seasons and moving in and out of seasons of our life and chapters of our life. And I guess the work that both you and I do separately and together very much is driven, or the motivation for a lot of people that go into physical movement or personal training or gyms or health programs or weight loss programs, they're very much trying to be in denial of the season of their life they're in, and they're trying to recreate their 21-year-old season. So I'll let that set the stage, and let's begin. What season are you in right now?
Oh, that is such a big question. That is such a big question. When you and I met, I remember coming to you quite profoundly, and the season that I was shifting into at the time was very much one around I wanted to soften and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wanted to do that is because I wasn't unhealthy. I probably was the healthiest I'd been in a long time, but I wasn't the skinniest. So I had like this push-pull going on in my head because about, I would say 18 months prior to us meeting, flying around. Of course there is. Tell me you're in Central Queensland without telling me you're in Central Queensland. So fun. So good here. And so when we were chatting, I certainly was healthy, but I wasn't lean. Mm. But prior to that, about 18 months before we chatted, I very much was very lean, probably underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't well. I was extremely anemic. I was undernourished. I was passing out 3 times a day. my work colleagues were concerned because I was this a luminous shade of grey constantly, apparently. I was like,
can grey be
so
illuminated?
Or something. Muted. Muted is probably the opposite to illuminated.
That's a good word.
And so I was like, oh, I'll just slap more makeup on the old face and a bit of bronzer and highlighter. She'll be right. However, as a person who has constantly, for a long period of my life, always been chasing that number, wanting that number, once I'm that, I'll be happy, I'll be worthy, I'll be a more, how would you describe, credible personal trainer, I'll be more qualified in my industry. Once I can get on the cover of an Oxygen or a Women's Health magazine, or my body's in such a state that I could, then I'll be worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll be able to add more value. And so it was this interesting space that I'd got myself in, and I did get there eventually. It took me almost 30 years. But I got there, but I was so unwell. And so then over the course of the next couple of years, I really worked on healing my body. And you were a big part of that a few years down the track. And I was like, okay, great. I've healed myself now. However, I still have a few things that I'd love to work on as far as food and my fitness and my health and the way that I do that. And I know we're going on the scenic route here, which is completely unlike me, but we are arriving soon. The scenic route is so much nicer. It's so much better than the Hume Highway or the freeway or the Tullamarine from the airport to the city. Like, that's just gross. We all know how awful that is. And I came to you and I was like, I'd love to drop maybe 5 kilos, not even because I was unwell, but I just like I like feeling fit. I like feeling like I can fit into these clothes that I had, and they fit well, not just they do up, that type of thing. And I don't think what I was chasing at that time was completely unrealistic, because I spent a lot of time really sitting in that going, am I chasing this number? Am I trying to go back to something? Am I trying to be this version of myself that I was when I was a 16-year-old state netball player, before I actually even became a woman and developed all of my curves and all of that type of stuff? Like, what am I actually achieving here? What am I striving for here? And so I really had sat with that for a little while, and I thought, I can be healthy and a little bit leaner. I get to be both here. And so I really checked myself. And I came to you and I said, Maddie, I really want to go on a health journey here that allows my body and that does that work that promotes health and healing from within. And it's something that I want to do from a feminine space, not from a masculine driving, forcing, shredding, cutting space. Because I know that world. I'm very good at that. I could click my fingers tomorrow and I could go dive right back into that method, and I could force cut, shred, flog, all of the things, and probably drop that 5 kilos in a month. But I don't want to do it like that anymore.
Why not?
Because it gets tiring. It hurts.
Mm.
I'm 37, not 27, not 17. And I'd really done a lot of, it was really interesting because, and this goes back, and I'm not sure if this is relevant for everyone. I expect that it will be for some people, because it's a conversation I've had more than once, especially people in this community. When I was younger, the people that were measuring my worth or that were judging me were very much doing it. They were A, masculine, they were men. They were the people's love that I craved. So my dad and my grandfathers and things like that. And the way that I heard that they were judging people's worth was with a masculine yardstick. How hard do they work? How high can they jump? How smart are they? How much can they pump out? How much can they perform? And so then it was interesting because I noticed that thread actually through a few of my relationships into my adult life, and it became, and I shifted my focus. I'm like, oh, where can I get this validation? And so I was with a guy for a long time. And again, I heard this dialogue, and whether he was applying it to me directly or not, I'm not really sure, but I heard this dialogue around, I like this person because they're a hard worker. I love this person because they're high performance. And he just was expressing that he liked these type of people that were displaying these qualities and these characteristics. So I was like, oh, I want this man to love me. I want to add value to this person's life. I want to be held in the highest regard in this person's life. And so that's what I did. Like, I'm going to be the fastest runner in the gym, the biggest lifter in the gym. I'm going to be the most ripped. I'm going to be the strongest. I'm going to be the best player on the netball court. I'm going to be all of the things. And it was so interesting because after years and years and years and years of actually getting to that peak, I got there. And then after 10 years, we broke up. And I was like, what's the dealio, bro? It's not really what I said, but you know what I mean. And he's like, I just don't feel like there's any, like, you're so masculine. I don't feel like that there's any polarity anymore. There's no softness about you. There's kind of no room for me here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is so interesting. Like, pardon the French, but it was a bit of a head fuck because I wasn't always the biggest, strongest, leanest, fittest person. I was a really overweight kid and have kind of yo-yoed along that journey a lot throughout my life. And so then to finally get in the best physical peak performance place of my entire life and then to be dumped after 10 years of someone that you'd been trying, thinking that, oh, that was the measure, I was like, this is really wild. This is so interesting. And so then that led to a bit of a journey of deep contemplation, and all roads lead to Maddie Lansdowne. So, because you are the center of the universe, Middle Earth, we're going to call you Lord of the Rings. Just, I'm not being paid for this plug, by the way, everyone. Just think, Matt's great. And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, there gets to be another way, surely, because we live in a dual universe. And so I was like, how can I feel in this season of my body moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
And I was 35 when we had a chat. And I know that's not old by any stretch of the imagination, but your body definitely responds differently at 35 than 25 than 15. I'd had a knee reconstruction. Things were starting to hurt a bit. And so I was like, I don't want to feel like I have to flog myself. I don't want to feel like I don't want to be caught in this push-pull of I'm going to go to super high-intensity group fitness classes or circuits or CrossFit or like those really high-intense things, because then, and I look at it like a squash ball or a bouncy ball in a squash court.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm throwing that bouncy ball super hard at one wall and just say that wall is like super high-intensity workout that I'm flogging myself in, I feel like that bouncy ball is coming back the other side to, oh, cool. Well, now I need to eat all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's desperation because I'm like, I'm so flogged. I'm so depleted. I feel like I need to replace and replenish all of that energy, because if I'm doing that too, sometimes three times a day, depending on what level of psychosis I'm in at the time, right? It's like, well, what if I could just soften all of that? And what if I wasn't pushing myself to the nth degree that then the reaction to that wasn't then having to eat all of the things or feeling like I could eat all of the things? Or this is such a timely conversation as we're recording. It's the week after Easter.
Yeah.
I'm going to smash my face full of Easter eggs and hot cross buns. And then I feel like I have to go on a 10-hour run in order to burn all of that off. But conversely, oh, I'm going to go on a 10-hour run so that then I can eat all of the things. And it was just like this yo-yo. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, like I know the yo-yo. I get the yo-yo. I can do the yo-yo. And I got amazing at managing that. I knew exactly what I needed to do in order to eat the things and have my cake and eat it too, essentially. And I had this big bugbear around, no, you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have cake for breakfast and be fit, healthy and strong for a lifetime. That was my tagline for a long time. And I really wanted to get around the notion of you can't out-exercise a bad diet,
mm-hmm.
because I did for like 15 years. And I'm like, yes, you can. Look at me doing it. But how was I really? How was I really? And eventually, it's all right, while you're young and fun, you got no kids, you got no anything, you can just do you.
Yeah.
But then, and so I worked out the loophole is, yes, you can, but not forever.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, it's easy when we're young and we're in a generation which has access to absolute excess of everything that's good, bad, and indifferent for us. But whether we like it or not, and whether the evidence shows up or not, it degrades the system.
Yeah. And just because maybe your body can out-train a bad diet body composition wise. Body composition is what B-stick percentage of the entire health pie. And I just thought, as a former fat kid, that was life. Everything was about how much fat you had on your body and nothing else mattered, which is really interesting because when we look at weight loss drugs and all of that type of thing, I've been that girl, mm-hmm. where I would pay anything, I'm like, give it to me. Back that truck up here. Injections, no worries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we know, they all have their own set of consequences. And there's very few people that get bariatric surgery on the other side of it that are like, whoa, this was the best choice ever, or on drugs for however many years or months even. Yeah. And they're like, whoa, that was the best decision I ever made.
But I get it.
Yeah.
Because my mindset's been there.
Oh, the appeal makes total sense to me.
Oh, absolutely. Because in my young, stupid brain, you know, what you look like and how much body fat you had on you was like, that was worth. That was how much value you could add into the world. That was how much beauty you were or were not giving into the world. And it's interesting. It's something that I wouldn't say that I still struggle with, but I definitely manage every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and a mentor of mine years ago said to me, once you're on that train, you don't get off. You're on and you're on for life. And I found that really, I was like, oh, that's really, and this lady, she's a really positive person. Like, she's the happiest, most positive person I know. And when she said that, I'm like, well, there must be something to that, because someone like her wouldn't be saying that just as a negative Nancy pessimist type of person. And she's worked with lots of people with lots of forms of disordered eating and all sorts of things throughout her career. And she said, once you're on, you're kind of on for life, but it's then how you manage that and you manage yourself within that. Because there's two different things there, because we can't really manage something outside of ourselves. We can only really manage or lead ourselves within that. So once you're on the train, it's either a 0 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 at any one time.
Yeah.
So fortunately for me, I get to sit at the 0 to 2 out of 10 most of the time. But it's still there. It's still a little thing. It's never really going away, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, the way I think about that idea of it's always there, because I would say it's the same for me in the sense that, and especially because there's a thing called transference, and that's when a practitioner takes on the problems of their clients, right?
Mm.
So I work with people talking about their thoughts about food all day. When I'm not sitting with clients, I'm thinking about the marketing that I need to write. That's the conversation going on in their head, right? And so I'm thinking about this all the time. And so the way I think about it, and I kind of, maybe I agree, maybe I don't, I feel too restricted by the idea that it's there forever. But if we think about it as a seesaw, and you're a person that can run along the seesaw, you kind of start off sprinting to the other side, right?
Mm.
And right to the very end. And it's like, whoa, it moves really quickly. It's really rapid, hits the ground. You might fall off the seesaw. And then it's like something happens and it's like, shit, I've got to be healthy again. And you sprint to the other end of the seesaw. And the idea, I think, in this conversation is that you want to ideally get to sort of wandering, casually wandering around the middle, which is like sometimes it leans a little bit this way and sometimes it leans a little bit that way. And when we notice the movement, it's like, oh, I think it's time to take a few steps sort of back onto the other side. And it's more of a peaceful relationship that we're trying to achieve with that which might be there for life. And this goes, we can dissect this down to not demonizing any of our thought processes or parts or things that we're ashamed of or embarrassed of. And so I know for myself that I often, there's a bit of self-coaching around, we're just walking around looking at the things that are in here in my head, right? And it's like, oh, just noticing them. Not judging them, not sprinting to the other end of the seesaw. Mm. And I mean, the season of life that I'm in right now is that for a newborn baby, right now I'm on the back of 3 hours sleep, a chocolate hot cross bun and being pissed on. and we've just had
living
Easter.
Living your best life over there.
Totally. Oh my God, Yali's been shit on so much more than I have. But it's just that like other side of Easter, noticing and being like, there's a lot going on right now. It's normal that this kind of chaos happens. One at Easter, but two, newborn baby, really disheveled life right now. But also being like, I'm not, and we've got some friends and people in our social circle which mean well and have just had different experiences that are just like, you've got to accept everything's fucked. It's not about you anymore. And Yali and I are really resistant to that because it's like that puts in place the idea that creates the clients that we work with, right? Which is that you don't matter anymore. You're not a priority anymore. Your health doesn't matter. And everything's about the kids. And if there's anything that one of the gifts, I guess, that you and I have had being born into this personal development generation is that we now know that do as I say, not as I do, doesn't work. And so the most important thing to have healthy, strong, smart, mature kids is to embody it. So, but the point, well, to get back to that original point was just like, instead of sprinting to either end of that seesaw or that yo-yo, so to speak, it's more about wandering around the middle, noticing and gently moving back the other way.
It just, it feels so much, it just feels like, it feels like the out-breath. You're like, oh.
It's a good way to put
it. I feel like we spend so much time in this crazy, ridiculous world, like.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe with words the face that I'm pulling right now, but a shallow breath, holding our breath. It's like, I'm a donkey on edge, that type of situation. And that's where we live our life out of. And it was so interesting for me when we had this conversation last year, how long it has taken me to slow the momentum of that sprint that you're talking about down. And Abraham Hicks talks a lot about this as well. Like, if you've got a fully loaded, I live in central Queensland, just about the coal capital of the country here. And so we've got massive fully loaded coal trains that flap in and out of this place all the time. And so what they're hundreds, probably thousands of tons, if they're heading straight down the train line at 110 kilometers an hour, fully loaded, and it's like, oh, I want to go the other way right now. Well, that thing isn't going to be able to stop on a dime, switch on a dime, be able to do a chuck the handbrake on and pull a Yui, and away we go back the other way. And I think, and this is another conversation that I speak with my friends a lot about as well. When I was younger, if I wanted to lose weight, bang, straight away, mindset shift, off we go. I dropped 20 kilos in 6 months, happy days.
Mm-hmm.
The older I get, the harder it is to do that, not because of my body or I've wrecked my metabolism or I'm getting older or any of that crap. It's because I have more experience and more emotions that are attached to food, that are attached to the way that I am, that are attached to my emotions and the way that I think about myself and my self-worth and all of that stuff. So for every extra experience, for every extra day of life that I've lived, it's like I've put more and more and more weight into this train and it's going faster and faster in the other direction.
Yeah.
And so I was really clear when I came to you about the goal that I wanted to achieve and the way that I wanted to do it, but it has astounded me how long that has taken, and it's almost taken an act of God completely out of my own hands to really actually slow me down. It has taken over 12 months to stop that running from one side to the other. Like, even as early as this year, my favorite thing to do was go and absolutely smash myself on a Friday afternoon at a HYROX workout for 45 minutes, come home, drink 6 ginger beers and go, oh shit, now I need to go to the gym at 6 a.m. in the morning and smash myself again. Like, that's that seesaw that you're talking about. It's just, it's that rubber ball. It's that bouncy ball in the squash court. It's a lot. But if that's the way, and the thing that I find really challenging about stepping off of that is that if that methodology has got us results in the past, and for me it has, and for so many people it has, and even for people in the mind-body nourishment community that we've talked about this with, that form, that methodology, that's got us results. And so it's really hard to shift into a different season, into a different way of doing things, when the way that's actually we're trying to stop is the thing that's got us results in the past. We know there's a different way to do it. We know that there's a better way to do it. But when all we want is results and we want them now, it's really hard to step off that fast-moving train to consider a better way because we want results now. And I think that comes part and parcel with our instant gratification lifestyle that we live in. Like, you and I are old enough to know the days of dial-up, and you'd sit there after 5 attempts, still 15 minutes later, and then just connected, and then Dad picks up the phone and then wrecks everything. It's like, oh! And maybe we'll get to talk to our friend on MSN for 5 minutes or something like that. I don't know.
I remember that, yeah.
Whereas now, today, I'm like, why isn't this starting straight away? What's wrong with you? Hurry up. It's interesting. Like, we can have Does Jeff Jowett talk about this? I think so. We have Christmas sitting in Coles and Woolworths, usually walking distance from most of us every single day of the year. We have Easter buns sitting in Coles and Woolworths a lot longer than Easter. And so it's really interesting, even like on a macro and a micro level, our ability to access things that makes us want results like this makes the way that we do it and doing things a different way and shifting with our seasons so much more difficult because we know that there's results available right here, right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if those results aren't actually serving us.
Well, something with the idea of this conversation around seasons, and I think women possibly go through more seasons, or maybe a better way to describe it is that women go through more obvious seasons with their body in regards to their hormones, and especially if kids are involved and that kind of thing. And so it makes me think of two things. One, I think there's a lack of rituals and rites of passage that happen, especially in the Western culture, that have either been lost or they're seen as not important. And I think there's a lot of sort of ritualistic stuff that's seen as not important in Western society, bar those that sort of maybe go to church on Sunday or have some kind of religious practice built in. You know, there's like communion and confirmation and these important little events. And I think that they're really lacking in society. So we get, we've got a society of people which are trying to chase the past, men included, but we're trying to get back to who we used to be rather than having this celebration of transition into a new phase where we are culturally conditioned to be like, oh, things are different now. And that's how it's been done for a millennia. And there's a reason for that. And that reason is that my body doesn't work the same. And I've had children and whatever that might be. And so, and then add in on top of that, the fact that exercise one for anybody that ever joins the program is to unfollow and unsubscribe from all of the input that you're getting from your social media about the 21-year-old that does 3 sit-ups and all of a sudden has abs because she was born with fantastic genetics and also she's Chinese. And it's like, and you're a curvaceous white woman over here that's had 4 kids and you're 50 and you're like trying to follow her and get her abs. It's not going to happen. And so getting rid of this clutter that's inaccurate, not relevant to us. But even though we are all individuals, but even just moving to more spaces where the people we follow or listen to are in the same chapter, have similar bodies, have similar stories, and it's funny that I say that because I don't have any of those stories, but have the capacity to recognize that your experience is not my experience. So we have to figure out how to do this for you. But, and I know I've opened up lots of different doors here, but the other thing I wanted to say, because you mentioned the femininity thing and doing things in a more free-flowing, smooth, kind of feminine way. And I think possibly, and maybe this will piss some people off, but possibly that's a consequence of whatever wave we're up to of the feminist movement, whereas women get their validation from behaving in a masculine way, by producing results, by performing in the workplace, by bringing home an equal amount or more money and being able to hustle in that kind of way, which is not me saying it shouldn't happen. It's simply me saying that if you enter the masculine space more often, the sacrifice is feminine space.
Yeah, you're right. You opened up about 16 tabs there, all of which were amazing. And now my chaotic brain is I feel like I'm trying to grab onto water. It's just, I'm like, oh, there's so much to grab onto. But everything, yes and amen. Let's just start with that.
By the way, we're not running a cult over here. The Maddie Lansdowne scenario is not a cult.
Could be though.
Yeah, but I think we need to introduce these, like, rituals and rites of passage and transition events into our culture. And maybe it just starts like everything on a very foundational level of the family. And something like, so Yali, Sri Lankan background, something I love when I found out about it is that when she got her first period, it's normal in Sri Lankan culture that there's a party. Everybody in the family is invited. You've got to wear your best attire. The photos of her are gorgeous. She's 16. And she's dressed in all of this regalia. She's just become a woman and everybody brings food. And it's like a 3 or 7, I forget how many days. It's a multiple day event to celebrate this transition. Whereas for us, talk to my sister, she was like ashamed, embarrassed. Mummy wasn't even around. Had to kind of talk to dad, who's an introverted kind of guy. And this is obviously 30 plus years ago. And it's just like an embarrassing thing that you hide and are ashamed of, and it's awkward to go and buy pads and tampons and talk. It's just completely different. Whereas if we ever were to have a little girl, I would 100% be embracing that kind of tradition. But I think we need the same thing at childbirth, at menopause, at when the kids move out of home, like these really significant events, which in the context of what we do, leads people to eat and seek comfort and dopamine and pleasure and fill the void that is missing because they feel unseen, unacknowledged, and forgotten about. So I think these events are really important. Plus, it attracts in other people in that chapter of their lives, and you fill the next stage of your life with like-minded people that are doing the same thing.
100%. And I think that conversation around transition is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And on so many different levels, but also the season thing. Remind me to come back to transition because I have some examples.
I'll write it down.
Amazing. So this is a language, and I said it as soon as I come on the podcast, as soon as you introduced me just then, I said it's great to be back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back where? We're only going forward. I want to get back to a size 10. I want to get back to what I weighed before kids. I want to get back to. And I just think that is such an interesting use of language that is unconsciously keeping us blocked where we are. Because the only power we have is here and now. It's not back anywhere. It's not even forward. It's not even, oh, when I lose 5, 10, 15, 25, 50 kilos, it's now. It's not back when we were skinny. It's not forward when we're going to be skinny again. It's now. And so I find it really interesting when the only place we are is here and the only place we're going is forward, how our mindset, when we're thinking about our health and even our finances or where we used to live. I think about when I used to live by the beach in Perth and I walked to the beach every day and it was amazing. It was so good. I'm like, oh, I'd love to be back there. I'm like, oh, do I want to be back there though? Can I appreciate this and love it for what it is? And can I feel the expansion in my heart and the gratitude and the appreciation for that right where I am now? But, oh, that was such a great time. And that'd be okay. And life now is pretty great. I really loved it when I was able to wear these kind of clothes. I look really cool there. I love that. I wonder what the next or the now season of me looks like.
Yeah.
I wonder how I can best be my now version, not try and send my now version back to a former version, because we're not starting again. It's my other favorite thing. I'm going to start again. I'm going to start again today. I use the terminology now, drawing a line in the sand,
mm-hmm.
because what happens to sand every 6 hours?
Yeah. Renewed.
Gets washed away.
Yeah.
Gets washed away, right? And that's life. We're just drawing new lines in the sand mm-hmm. because every time we draw a new line in the sand, every time we have a refocus or a review moment, we're going forward from this point now with all of that knowledge and all of that wisdom and all of that information that we've gathered over our life and over our time. So I think it's quite futile and also a little bit damaging to wish ourselves backwards.
I think there's something else in the backwards thing, which is if we all think back to like our first love, right? And we think, well, there's often a part of people that are like, oh, I want to, and me included, like, oh, I want to feel that intensity of amazingness. And it was so good. And so we romanticize the past incorrectly, right? And so when we say, I want to get back to my 21 or 25 or whatever body, or I'm 60 now, and when I was 40, I hated myself, but I'd kill for that experience now.
Wish I was that fat again.
Yeah, totally. We hear that all the time, right? Because people say, when I look at a photo when I was 50, 40, 30, I hated that person at the time. And now I'd do anything to be back there, right? But we also romanticize that past and we have a very biased view of that. And we only remember the positive good things because we're present in our current struggle. So when we're remembering or aiming for the future, we're only looking at the good parts of that, right? And it's like, I want to be someone that goes to the gym every day because then I'll lose weight and be fit and strong. So what's the shit part of that? I've got to be someone that gets up at 4:30 every single day and drags myself out of bed and is underslept every day because I've also got a couple of kids. And my point is that there's a good and a bad to everything, just as our fun memories about being skinny and living the life and being able to do vodka shots and eat Maccas all night while we're smashed and still wake up full of energy, skinny and all of that. There's a shit side to that story that you don't want back either, right? And so I guess the point of me sharing this is to encourage people to make an effort to acknowledge the shitty parts of their memories that they're chasing and also realize they're looking through the lens of their shitty experience right now, which needs your attention.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar, and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there.
Yeah, it's so true. There's this, like, romanticizing past people. There's this one guy, and I often fondly will go, that was a funny time. That would have been terrible. If we ended up together, that would have been horrifically bad. But you don't think about that bit. You're just like, the oh, yeah, bits. That felt good. But also, like, when you're remembering, like, that intensity and how good it felt and just, like, how potent that energy was, life is not a 100-meter sprint. That was a 100-meter sprint. Life is a marathon and we're just plodding along. And this is wonderful and this is great. And one of our old netball coaches used to say, it's what you do next that counts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that, but I'd even up-level that too. It's what you do now that counts. And we listened to one of your podcasts the other day in the car on the way home.
Around. Oh, part of the family, didn't even know.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was two or three or something. I don't know. I fell asleep through half of it. No, I'm joking.
Hey, I've been told many times that people use the podcast to go to sleep.
That's funny. That's funny. But you were talking about, I can't remember which podcast number it was, but the whole idea of it's not what you do next. It's not what you do tomorrow. It's not what you do on Monday. It's what you do now. If it's 10 o'clock at night and you've got leftover chocolate eggs in the fridge and you could have one and no one had known, it probably won't matter at the end of the day. But it's what you do now when it's just you and there's no one looking and there's no validation.
Yeah.
That really counts. So I think it's really interesting. And again, does it really matter to say, oh, I wish I was back there or that was awesome? Does that really matter at the end of the day? It doesn't really have a huge, profound impact on your life right now, but it's really interesting. Life is lived in the micro moments. It's these little things over and over again, and we don't even realize that we're doing it. Then you could end up like me and become a super overanalyzer and be so super self-aware that you're scared to have any thought about anything because, like, what if it's wrong? And all of the things. And so then there's a balance. And that goes back to that seesaw that you were talking about as well. Like just having a slow meander around the middle, the center of the seesaw. And I think it's important to remember that nature seeks balance always.
Mm-hmm.
Nature seeks balance always by virtue of itself. And I think that we forget that we are nature. We are part of the natural world. And so we too should seek balance, but we live our life and the world encourages and distracts us to live a life of extremes to keep us out of that center, because when we're centered and present, that's when we're powerful.
Yeah.
When we're not distracted, when we're not pulling ourselves from pillar to post or one end of the seesaw to the other, that's when we're powerful. And so that's dangerous to the powers that be. And so I think it's, again, we won't get too far down the rabbit hole in fear of pissing people off, but I don't really care. You're not my real dad. And even then, I wouldn't care if I pissed you off. Just ask him, he'll tell you. So he's probably listening to this. Hi, Dad. So it's important to remember that, and speaking of Dad, he always used to say to me, balance is key. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I hate it when he's right, and he was. It's so key, that middle ground, to walk that middle path. And just to have our values, the things that guide us, that keep us in that balance and that middle path. And we have a few key decision-making filters. And so then if we're having a little bit of a rough time or it's starting to feel like it's a four-wheel drive adventure out there instead of cruising along on the scenic route or on the M1 or whatever it is that you want to be on, it's going, I think I'm a little off course here. And just being easy with it and just being easy about it. I mean, like, okay, cool, that's cool. Like even me, I've just been on holidays for 5 days, been in the car. I don't even want to talk about some of the things that went into the hole in front of my face. Like it was not at all exemplary. And last night I'm like, I just feel yuck. Like, I'm just really looking forward to putting on a batch of meat broth. I'm going to have some eggs. I'm going to be well hydrated. I'm going to get back into my supplementation. I'm going to get out in the sun, got no shoes on, and just be easy about it. Not get on the scales and go, oh my God, I've put on 5 kilos. I'm a horrifically awful, terrible person. And so now I'm going to go run for 3 hours to try and fix that damage.
Yeah, not using it as a punishment, but more as a something like it would be nice to feel better. It feels nice when I do those things.
Yeah.
And rather
and
than
just
like
be easy.
Yeah.
It feels nicer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sort of as an extension of that, like wanting to reframe the way that we're moving forward. When I think about people that are in pursuit of a new season of their life and like trying to change, and Yali and I have had this conversation many times because I guess in similar ways we work with psychology and behavior change. People often think that they're going to arrive at this destination of finishing the program or finishing the journey, and it'll be like a transformer that they won't even recognize themselves. They'll be like, oh my God, I just woke up and I was this entirely different person. When actually the way that results work is you get there and you're like, oh, I'm the same person. Things are just a little bit better. And I think like we've got this delusional idea of being in pursuit of a version of ourself that possibly could never exist, because it would mean rejecting so many of the good and bad parts that have gotten you this far. And so it's like, are you just going to abandon half of your personality? And if you do, you've got to put something in there. So I think as well, and I think I try to do a good job of being very honest and real. And every business coach that I've ever talked to thinks that's a very dumb business or marketing strategy. But I try to be really honest. Like, this is going to take time. I've been working with a few teenagers lately and was talking to one of their mums. And I was like, to be honest, the work we do with your 14-year-old son now, we're probably going to see the results when he's 25. And honest with a lot of people about like, yeah, sure, we got a 6-month program, but you know, if we're working with 40 years of stuff, we probably need to hang out for a few years. And I think that's necessary for most people in order to ease into the transition of being someone different in a way that they recognize and don't want to run from.
It's 1% every day. Hey, you talk about one tweak a week. Because after a year, that's 365% better. After 3 years, that's nearly that's over 1,000% better.
Yeah.
That's a huge transformation in 3 years. And it's so interesting that you say that. And again, it sounds cliche and it's annoying as all shit to hear. It's the journey that counts, not the destination. Oh, shut up with your stupid journey destination horse shit. I just want to be rich and skinny living on the beach now. Thanks.
Sign me up.
But it's unfortunately, again, it's true. And I'll never forget on one of my weight loss escapades, of which there have been many. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if many people know my story, but I've lost and gained over 40 kilos 3 times in my life. Mm. And so that's that extreme that we're talking about. I go from one extreme to the other. And now I just float around the same, maybe 5 to 10 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of go, oh, I'm getting a little bit heavy on that top end. We'll just bring it back a little bit. I don't need to get to 40 kilos of obesity before I'm ready to do something about it anymore. And that's been life and experience and all of that type of stuff, but also being easy with seasons. I'm not going to go and set myself up for success and go on a strict broccoli and air diet the day before a family holiday at Easter. Like, let's not be silly. But I've forgotten completely what I was going to say then. Oh, yeah, that's right. And there's nothing more depressing than waking up on the day of hitting your goal weight when you've hated yourself through the journey. You've been depressed the whole time because of what an awful, fat, horrible, disgusting monster that you are. And then you wake up on the day that you hit your goal weight, you get on the scales, you're at your goal weight, and it didn't fix everything for you. You're now skinny and you feel even worse because you had this idea in your head that once I get to this goal weight, once I reach this, everything will transform overnight. I will feel so much better. I'll be happy. I'll be amazing. But the seed that you plant and the seed that you water is going to be the fruit that you bear. And so if I'm sitting here flogging, hating myself through this season of weight loss because I'm such an awful, disgusting monster, I'm going to bear the fruit of awful, disgusting monster on the day that I arrive.
Absolutely.
And and I was only very young. I was only about 21 or 22. And I woke up and I'd hit my goal weight and I was like, there was no feeling, there was no emotion, there was no change. And I'm like, I was devastated.
Yeah.
Because my whole life had been based around me getting on the scale on this number. I thought this glass ceiling was going to lift and there'd be singing and dancing and all sorts. There was nothing. And sorry, I'll get some words out of my face in a minute. So I went to, it's one of these sliding door moments. I then was like, oh, well, fuck this shit then. So I went to Woolworths on the way to work and bought a 6-pack of donuts and smashed them into my face before 8 a.m. in the morning. And so began the climb back up to 40 kilos overweight. And I think I'd put that 40 kilos back on in 12 or 18 months, which is pretty hard to do, actually.
That's a commitment.
That's not an easy thing to do. And so it was so interesting that the day that I reached my goal weight was the day that I started back up to my next experience of being obese, because my life wasn't transformed. My life wasn't changed. It was so interesting. Anyway, I want to go, and I know we're running out of time, but I want to talk about this thing around transition really quickly.
I was just about to say transition.
Let's talk about transition.
Firstly, though, thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate some of the vulnerability in there. And I think a lot of people can relate to what you're saying. And just to sort of just add to that quickly, we were watching a show the other night because at the minute, with me working and sometimes sleeping in different rooms, and like the only spot that we kind of bond is like when we can get him asleep and then watch a show together. That's kind of what's going on at the minute. There was a show with this like really overweight woman and her fear around bariatric surgery. And somebody sort of called her out in a way that said, the reason that you won't commit to this is because you're terrified that you'll lose all the weight and you'll discover that you're the same miserable, sad person that you are now. And it's really relevant to this. And I think that's part of the self-sabotage cycle for people, is that they're afraid that they'll discover the person they are is who they are, right? Mm. Which is why not doing deep emotional work that we do is easy to avoid, because you've got to confront some dark parts of yourself. And unfortunately, many people need to go on that yo-yo or sprinting up and down the seesaw enough times to the point that they realize, oh, I am a person that needs to do some serious work on myself. And as many people in our community say, they end up just sort of, things just end up getting better without really focusing on it. But you've also got to have the courage to confront the reality that the parts of yourself that you're running from might actually be true, and they might need some love, attention, care, healing, release. And that can be a bit scary.
Mm. And there's so much in that, and it's so worth doing. And oh, I just feel so much for that woman that you're speaking about on that
show.
Yeah,
we both cried. We both cried.
that just gets me in all of the feels. And in saying that, like, it was really interesting when I was at my fittest, healthiest, strongest, and that subsequently ended up being the end of my relationship, which was interesting because I went on my first diet back when I was 14 to try and get a boyfriend because I was 95 kilos and 14 years old.
Mm.
And so I had this whole idea that skinny equals love and attention from men. And so that's what I'd spent my whole life trying to do. And so when I'd actually reached the peak pinnacle of this, and ironically enough, that was the time where the love of my life actually was like, no, you're out. I'm like, oh my God, there is that. Like, again, like I said earlier, it was a bit of a head fuck, but I had to be really careful that I didn't go, well, what am I doing this for then? Fuck this shit, I'm going to start the donut train again and then go, all right, cool. Oh, why am I even bothering? But I was fortunate enough that by that point I'd done enough personal development, enough professional development to understand that this was for me and the benefits and the features and how important and amazing it is to be fit, healthy and strong for a lifetime within yourself, not just to get attention and validation from other people. That didn't happen for me, but it very easily could have been, because you attach this negative association with, oh, well, when I'm fit, healthy and strong, I lose love. So by virtue, I'm going to do its opposite. And I watched this happened with my best friend's mum when I was a kid. She was a really big lady and we watched her in the gym for years, and she lost something like 70 or 80 kilos, like just huge amount. And she worked hard. She did the things, and then she hit her goal weight and her husband sacked her. her husband broke up with her. You're out, lady.
That's kind of like sacking her.
Yeah, no good. You're away you go. And then he went and hooked up with another really big lady. So that must have been his thing and his type. And that's fine. But Like, imagine that. You've done what you thought was this amazing thing for yourself and to be a good role model for your kids and to be a good positive influence at home. And then for that to you can see how sometimes getting great results and then something bad happening around that, how easy it is to attach that negative association to it. It's like we talk about cholesterol. It's like blaming the firemen for the fire because they were there.
Yeah.
Like, nah, they were there trying to put it out, champ.
And we all want to belong, right? Like, we've had plenty of people through the program over time, which, like, when they started diving into the psychology, they realized, oh, I realize every time I start to get skinny or lose weight or move in that direction, my dad starts making comments. My mum starts making comments. Everyone starts trying to feed me because my entire family is overweight. Right. And then I get this weird sense of being like, well, I can't be a healthy person in a skinnier body because that would mean possible abandonment from my tribe. And same with relationships. We see people sabotaging each other in relationships to keep them where they believe they deserve because that's what they're used to. And whether it's sport, health, whether it's work, success, career, it's like, yeah, it's really easy to be like unconscious of the sabotage that others are doing to you until you, I guess, get the right direction or tools or read the right book to start looking objectively at what's happening, connecting the dots and the patterns and being like, oh, that's why I keep doing this.
It's like Chinese water torture and you don't even realize.
Yeah.
And the people that do it don't even realize either because they're being threatened as well. It's okay. Like my dad even does it now. He goes, oh, you're looking well, Lise. I like it when you've got a little bit of extra weight on you. Mm-hmm. Like I think what he's trying to say is, for the past 10 years, you've come home hungry and skinny, and I do. I would come home and I'd be like hungry and skinny, and I'd just eat everything in mum's fridge for a week, and then I'd go back to my life where I don't have all of the delicious treats that mum has. And so, but people don't get anything by it. And I even notice that at our place at the moment, like I've dropped my alcohol consumption right off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting the social things that the people in your house bond over, because as a result, even like people in my house have dropped off the amount of alcohol that they're drinking as well. It's like really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this transition conversation, let's go there and we'll wrap up because otherwise we'll be here all day.
We'll do another one.
We will do a segment. We'll come up with the ranty series name and that'll be a fun time. Yeah. Soapbox Sally. No, we can't call it that because none of our names are Sally.
Sally could be the energy that we embody whilst ranting.
Oh, yeah. It can't be Angelica, though. Angelica's my mean girl persona I've given. Like, remember the Rugrats?
That's what I was just about to say.
Yeah. 100%. That's the one. So this transition piece, I think, is missing and so important. And I've got two examples I want to talk about. And yeah, it's largely related to work, but I really love, and you've shared that story before about the transition and the ceremony with Yali when she was moving into puberty as a girl. I just think that's so amazing. And I tried to do that a little bit with one of the young people in our house, but it wasn't really, I was the only one that thought that was cool. So it was a bit hard to kind of get everybody on board with that. Yeah. And she was like, Lisa, this is really weird. I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm trying to be fun and cool, but clearly I'm really botching this up badly. But I caught up with my longtime friend, Matthew and his wife and their kids on Easter Sunday. And Matthew's been in the Air Force since we finished school. So 20 something years. His dad was in the Air Force. Like Air Force has, he grew up on RAF bases. Air Force has been his whole entire, not just adult life, but life.
Mm-hmm.
And he is currently in a position where he has two young kids, both of which have high needs and are set up in really great schools and really good medical support and professionals and things, everything they need around them. However, with the Air Force, that requires you to be stationed in different areas, and he's overdue to be stationed in somewhere other than where he is set up with his family and all the kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, well, I'm not prepared to move my kids away from the things and the services that they need. I'm not prepared to move my wife away from her family and friends. And I'm like, no, you can't go again. Sorry. I spent my whole life with you being too far away from me. And it's completely about me. And so he's like, well, I have a decision to make. I have to leave the Air Force in order for me to be able to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he has done that. He's given his notice. He's on leave his last weeks this week. And then he starts his new job with his new company doing something similar. But for the first time ever, he's going as a civilian to a job. He's lived as someone of service. He's worked as someone of service his whole life. And we're having a conversation, and Zadok's ex-army as well. And Maddie said to him, not you, Maddie, my friend Maddie. I have two great Maddies in my life. Said, have you got any tips for transition? Like, and it really got me thinking, and I've listened to podcasts of ex-service men and women and how we just discharge from a certain way that we've always been. And yeah, we're talking about work here, but if you can apply the parallel over to whatever area of your life that might be relevant right now. But we've been a certain way and we lived within a certain parameter for so long. And then ourselves and society just expect us to go, okay, cool. Well, on Friday, you're going to stop working here. And then on Monday, you're going to start at this place. And then you just carry on like nothing's happened. He's turning up in civvy clothes, doesn't have to wear a uniform.
It's a huge change.
And I just was like, and Zadok was great. Like he had lots. He's like, yes, this will happen. You'll think about this. You'll romanticize this. You'll want to go back even 10, 20 years down the track. You'll want to go back. The answer is that you don't. And it was really interesting, but similar sort of thing happened to my dad when he'd been Ferg the electrician his whole life until one day he wasn't. And it has been a really tough 3 years. He has just been like,
yeah,
I was very ready to retire. I didn't want to do it anymore. I was tired and burnt out and had enough, but I don't know who I am without this box in which I've formed myself to for so long.
Yeah.
And there's no transition work. Like there's no, it just, you expected to go from one identity to the other.
Yeah.
And transitions in life are so, so important. And I think that's what makes the difference between people that can shift throughout life well and people who don't cope is how well and how effectively have we transitioned. And even in childbirth, and you would have seen this recently and in the studies that I've done with my doula training in the last couple of years, we talk about transition being super, super important where we move from the first stage of labor to the second stage of labor. First stage of labor is where the cervix is dilating, and that's usually the part that takes all of the hours. And then the transition is where we're kind of moving from the dilation phase into the bearing down and pushing stage, and the baby gets born. And they talk about transition being the toughest bit, the most intense, that I can't do this anymore. This is too much. This is, it's, and I just find it so interesting that it's called transition. And it's quite often referred to as the hardest part of childbirth. And so when we think about how much not support is given to the transitions in our lives, and that could quite possibly be the hardest part of any change, not where you were and not where you're going, but that change in between each thing. I remember last year I had a bunch of different projects on the go, and it wasn't that each thing was difficult or hard. I just was burnt out because I was constantly transitioning from one thing to the other, and that was the tough bit.
Yeah, well, we're creatures of habit. Brain. We're creatures of habit, right? And that predictability and familiarity breeds a sense of safety. So when it comes to transition and repeated transition, it really wanes on our energy in a way that's like we're perpetually identifying new fears, new threats to our survival. And so we struggle to adapt then, or to get comfortable after adapting. And so it makes sense. And it's interesting too, having just literally watched somebody go through in the last, 8 weeks or so, 7 weeks ago now, watching someone go through childbirth, and that's getting to that moment of can't do it, nah, I'm not doing it, like, or what do? I don't know what to do. And there's maybe something unique about birth in the sense that you don't have a choice. It's happening. You're in it physically. Whereas I think as well with the transitions that we see with retirement or our lives that we then go on to use food or alcohol or sex or gaming or porn or whatever to fill the void, is that we've got time. And so people think, like, again, it's like that romanticization. Oh, you're retired. You've got all this time on your hands. Like, you should be happy about not having to get up at 5 a.m. You should be happy about this. And I think it all circles round to doing some self-work and understanding, what did I get from my job that I also need to get from retirement? Purpose. Okay, well, we can do purpose being a Sparky or running this podcast, or we can find other ways to get purpose. Maybe we volunteer. And so I think it comes back to knowing what you get from the stage you were in before so that you can then identify the voids, the gaps, the unmet needs in the next phase, but you and then go and find those answers or solutions in different ways rather than trying to get back to how it was before.
And again, I think it comes back to knowing yourself and knowing what you're like. We are creatures of habit and I love routine. So again, I've been on the Gold Coast beachfront. It's been amazing. I'm like, oh man, I just wish that this could be my life forever. Not because I could do nothing, but that my routine is I get up at sunrise and go for a run along the beach or a walk. And then I go for a, and at 9 o'clock, I'm going to go for a swim from this time to, and I'm still going to have routine, but it's going to be very much around walking and swimming and eating good food and chatting to good people and resting and exercising and doing all the things that I love to do all day, every day, but within a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we transition, and I know we're talking a little bit about work and retirement and stuff, we lose all of our routine. We kind of lose the framework in which we feel safe to operate in, because if we don't know where the edge of the cliff is, we're not going to do anything because it could be right there. However, if we create frameworks around our own lives, that way we can live our life to the fullest within that, because we know that we're safe. We won't live life to the fullest somewhere that we don't feel is safe because we don't know where the safety boundaries start and end.
This is something else I want to add to that quickly, which is the other thing, which is part of transition for people, whether you consciously choose to make this transition at some stage of your life or it's forced upon you. And that's the idea that most people have either an employer or a business that's got staff. And so it's like this accountability structure that is enforced by somebody else. Like, I have to go to work because I'll get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we transition into a stage of life, no matter your age, where you're transitioning from, I do things because my life is set up in a way that means I have to now I have to choose to do that. And I have to be self-responsible for the structure and the routine and the food. And so, and that's part of the difficulty, is it's like we go from our younger seasons, our younger years, where we didn't have to worry about the structure because our body had it sorted because it was young. It hadn't had enough damage yet to start accumulating all the evidence, right? And then we get to a point where it's like, oh shit, I've got to take responsibility for this now. My body just, I didn't even have to think about it before, which is the same with the retirement example. The boss, I had to go to work for the boss and to pay the bills. And now it's like, oh, I have to take over responsibility for that accountability.
Yeah, it's, and that's what I was going to say as well. And what I find scary is that the way that I've always gotten results, and I see this with my dad as well, it's through being in pain. Mm-hmm. So as humans, we're either moving away from pain or towards pleasure. And naturally, like, we're more wired to move away from pain than what we are to move towards pleasure. But as we're moving away from pain, we're kind of moving towards pleasure as a default result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. And I don't know if this is relevant for anybody else, but sometimes I've really got to watch my inner dialogue and myself talk, because the way that I've ever got myself to take action and get up and do things to get result is by being like applying so much pain to where I am and what I'm doing. If I stay here, that's the only thing that's launching me out of that. And so sometimes the only thing that's getting me out of bed in the morning to do something good for myself is, come on, you fat, lazy shit. If you don't do this, you'll be the size of a house and a tub of lard and no one will love you. Like, that's not really very good positive self-talk at all. But I tell you what, if that's what you've been used to having to say, or not having to, but if that's what you've been used to habitually saying to yourself in order to get up and do something to get a result, it's like, oh, how else can we position ourselves in order to be able to do something or take an action that's actually for positive benefit? And I saw this with my dad as well. It's like, oh, the second he was out of pain and owned everything and paid everything off and there's no kids at home to feed and everything's all good, he'd have a meltdown. Because it's like, oh, it's been the need to have to pay this and do this and support this and my staff need me and like that you were talking that they need me to show up. And the second all of that goes away, it's like, I don't actually know how to show up anymore when everything's all good.
Just for myself. Like,
yes. And I think that's important as well when we're on health journeys, and just say that we do arrive at a milestone or a checkpoint, because the GIST journey is never over until we're dead in the ground. It's a case of, oh, I don't actually know what it's like to not have to be thinking that I need to lose weight.
Mm.
I get to a healthy weight range and go, oh, I don't know what it's like to not be in constant pursuit of more skinniness, of more health, of more ripped, cut, shredded abs. Like, what do you do when you're here? And it's again, I think this is a conversation that we could go right into another time, but it was just such an interesting concept that what is actually driving you? And is that positive or negative? And are we trying to achieve positive results by virtue of negative stimulus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. I've got 10 comments, but I think this is like we should wrap this up. But I think we've like what I love about this conversation around seasons and transition and moving from one phase of life to the other is one, I think it's sort of a call to arms in a way for people listening to maybe start looking at rituals and transition events so that you can acknowledge what's going on and surround yourself with like-minded people. But the other thing that I really like about it is that I think it really validates how food noise, food decisions, food obsession, alcohol, insert any of the dopamine stimulating things, it really highlights where those voids are for people and why all this obsessing over calories and thinking and weight and where it comes from. Because every transition presents a void that either needs to be filled correctly or gets filled with the lowest barrier to entry thing, which is usually shitty food or alcohol or whatever it might be. So I think you've done a really great job in just what you've shared and navigating like this topic, because I think a lot of people will listen and be like, I totally get what you're talking about.
I hope so. Even to the point where my bestie, like we talk about transition, when she's transitioning from dropping her kids off to daycare to going to a job that she hates, she gets an almond croissant on the way, like on the transition. So she's in this, when she's transitioning, going from somewhere that she doesn't want to go, straight away, it's let's soothe that with an almond croissant. Isn't that so interesting? And if you're a driving or a car eater, as I like to describe myself sometimes, when you're transitioning from one place to another, this might be a really interesting thing to consider. Where is it that I'm going, or where is it that I'm transitioning to when this is happening? Am I soothing where I've been, or am I kind of getting out ahead of where I'm going? Because one or the other, I might not really want to be there.
That's so good. That's such a good thing. That's a really good like thought practice or thought experiment. So I like it. For anyone that's listening that's like, Lisa is awesome, where can they hang out with Lisa?
I have been a little bit slack on my socials lately, and that's been quite deliberate. I've been trying to take a bit of time away from the screen.
Not a bad
thing. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not. So if you find me on Instagram at Lisa U Ferg, and that's L-I-S-A, the letter U, F-E-R-G, and drop me a DM, I'd love to hear from you. I haven't got a lot of action on there at the moment, but don't take that as it's the word I'm trying to find. This is happening to me a lot lately where I'm mid-sentence and all of the words just fall out of my ear holes instead of my mouth. Oh, but yes, don't take that as a lack of attendance. We will do that. The next conversation that we have, and if we are going to have this whole conversation where you go from being a really good, sharp person to an absolute space kidder in the space of a day. So yes, Instagram's good at Lisa U Ferg. I'm somewhere on Facebook. I don't know what my weird handle is on that. But to be honest, email, like it's old school, but I'm all over my email. I love a good chat. So Lisa at lisauferg.com will also get me if you wanted to have a bit more of a chat. I would love to hear from you.
Thank you. I'll put that info down below. And the question we ask everybody, and you've already been asked this question on episode 405, but what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
I wish more people knew about their options for safe movement in different seasons.
That's your wheelhouse.
Yeah. And I just wish people knew and understood that there are different types of safe movement options for people in all stages of life, whether you're a 19-year-old young gun, or whether you're 42 and a half weeks pregnant, or whether you're 85 or 95 or anywhere in between, there are safe movement options for you. And I would love to help you know what they are.
I like it. Well, maybe you'll get a heap of emails.
Maybe.
Thank you so much for hanging out. Appreciate you. This conversation's incredible. I think a lot of people are going to love it. And we'll catch up, I guess, on the next podcast that we do.
See you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Thursday's call. Let's do that.
See you then. Okay.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember, too, that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.